Thanks for downloading this, the 294th episode of the IVMV podcast. I'm Corey, one of the co-hosts of this podcast. We have an interview episode for you this week, but first I have some news to share. First off, our Cubs bus trip tickets are now on sale for everyone. We gave our Patreon supporters the benefit of a pre-sale, and we're really excited to hang out with those of you that took advantage of it. The Patreon discount still applies, and if you didn't get the Patreon message on how to take advantage of it, then get a hold of me. You can email me, Corey@IVNV.com. So as I said, the tickets are now available to everyone. The date for this bus trip is August 8th, and the bus will depart from Moline, Illinois, and we'll go up to Wrigley, watch the Cubs host the defending World Series champion San Francisco Giants. If you've never done a bus trip, they're really nice. You don't have to worry about driving. You don't have to worry about parking or anything like that. The bus drops us off and picks us up right there on Waveland at the ballpark. And if you want any information on this, go to ivnv.com/bus. The bus is now about 50% sold out, so don't procrastinate. And if you have any questions that aren't answered on the website, then email me, Corey@ivnv.com, or you can tweet at us at ivnv. The other thing I want to mention is the meetup we're having at spring training. It's on March 19th at the Diamondbacks spring training ballpark. They're playing the Cubs that night. We chose a game away from Sloan because that's a night game, and we thought that might be more fun. Andy and I will be at spring training March 14th through the 20th, so let us know if you're there and want to meet up at any other games. I'm really excited to share this week's episode with you. I had the opportunity to talk with Sahadev Sharma of Baseball Prospectus earlier in the week. If you're not familiar with Sahadev, he's a must-follow on Twitter. He's very smart. He knows his baseball. He knows his Cubs, and so I don't really know why you would not follow him and also read his pieces at Baseball Prospectus. Sahadev and I discussed a range of Cubs topics. We talked about the Pagoda projections, which we talked about on last week's episode. We talked about the timing of Addison Russell's call-up and what the Cubs will look like under Joe Maddon. We talked about Javier Baez's struggles, and if Javi's high strikeout rate in winter ball has you concerned, then Sahadev has some news that might make you feel a little bit better. He also talks about what went wrong with Edwin Jackson, and he has a plausible theory about why Edwin hasn't turned out to be the pitcher the Cubs were hoping for. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I know you will too, so here it is. And joining me on the phone is a writer and editor for Baseball Prospectus, and you probably know him from his commentary on the Cubs on Twitter. And he was at one time a Cubs podcaster with the Bleacher Nation podcast. It's Sahadev Sharma. Sahadev, thanks for coming on the IVMV podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, let's start with the Pagoda projections. They recently came out, and according to these projections, the Cubs are roughly an 82-80 team. We talked about these projections on the last episode of our podcast. What are your thoughts on these Cubs projections?
You know, projections, I'm not, that's above my head as far as getting those systems to work and getting them to do what they do. But, I think they're interesting as far as a baseline. You know, this is, if everybody performs as expected, nothing goes haywire, you know, nothing goes extremely bad, nothing goes extremely good, doesn't 82-80 sound like what the Cubs should be? Just based on what we know,
right,
of their team, so it sounds pretty fair to me. I think there's some things I look at in general at Pagoda, and I was like, and I get very confused. But the overall system makes sense. So you have to realize like how far it's looking back, what it's looking at, think little details like that, and then it all kind of comes together, and you can understand why something will look really weird. I just got a text from a White Sox beat writer asking me to explain why Samardzija was so low, and it's still taking into effect some of his bad years as a reliever, and right. And it's kind of hard to convert that. So looking at Pagoda in general, there can be some quirks, but I think there's some interesting things, especially with the Cubs. I think what it projects for Bryant is kind of ridiculous almost, you know, how much value. I think it only projects him for about 200 plate appearances and almost two warp if I'm right. And right, that's insane for 200 plate appearances. That means that would put him, so a full season is what, like it's over 600 plate appearances. So three times, that's a six warp player for a rookie season, for a rookie player. So that's how bullish it is on Bryant. So you have to love stuff like that. But then a guy like Arrieta, who I feel, you know, it's more than just a 1 year thing. Bakota should not rate him as he played last year. It wouldn't make any sense. No projection system should rate him based on 1 year. That wouldn't make any sense. But I feel just by watching him and talking to him that he's going to repeat next year, if not better, for 200 years. All it depends on his health. I think he's legit, but that's, you know, that's me. And I have, and you know, I'm a human being who's talked to Jake Arrieta, who's, you know, who can, you know, gauge his mental ability as well. So, you know, these are all different things that you can't put into a projection system, but I think it's fun to look at and really interesting. I've written a couple things about, Pagoda projections, not with the Cubs, but I think what it projects for Houston is kind of interesting. There's so many things. We had a piece on the website today, which is what day is today? I don't even know. Sorry, I'm bad on days because I'm a writer. I think it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Yeah, I had to stop and think about it too.
We had an interesting piece about, and now I'm blanking on his name, the pitcher for Willie Peralta for the Brewers, who Pagoda likes as a breakout candidate, and PitchFX would tell you something different. So it's interesting how these projection systems work and what they input and how we're always trying to fine tune them. And I think there's always room for improvement. I'm curious to see what little tweaks we can do to make it even better.
Right. So as you can expect with any team, you know, it's got a lot of prospects, and the prospects are kind of starting to come to the surface. There's a lot of speculation about the timing of when these players are going to get called up. I'm just going to skip Chris Bryant because I think if all goes well, it won't be long. I'm more curious about Addison Russell. And do you think that his call-up will be impacted by the situation that the Cubs major league team is in 2015?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation, right? I guess what, you know, I tried to talk to Jason McLeod about this, about how much does how Starlin is playing, and what if Starlin's the shortstop, you know, come July and Russell is ready, the team is competing and he's going to help them, right? He's going to make them a better team. Do you move Starlin Castro off shortstop if you believe that Russell's the better defensive shortstop? Or do you keep him there, keep Castro there because he's the veteran and you just don't move, you know, you don't shake things up with a veteran unless things are going wrong and a move is necessary. You know, assuming that Castro is doing well and healthy and playing up to his capabilities. I think it poses a really good dilemma, as they've said often. You know, this is a good problem to have, but I don't know how it shakes out. I strongly believe that if healthy, Russell is the best, outside of Bryant, is the best of the bunch and has a chance to be a superstar. I think he's the best shortstop prospect that they have, shortstop in the system when all is said and done, whether it's Starlin Castro, Javier Baez, Alcantara, Russell's the best of the bunch, your best option. And I've thought about this and I just have a hard time figuring out what they do because you don't, you know, a guy like, Manny Machado, now injuries have kind of kept him from moving to shortstop, but that was his best spot. That's where he should be playing. But JJ Hardy, who's solid, but Machado was probably better than him, 2 years ago, is, you know, pushed JJ Hardy, pushed him to third base. Do you push Russell to wherever the opening is, second base, third base, whatever it is? Do you push him there when that's not really his best spot? Maybe you do. Maybe that's where the, you know, clubhouse chemistry type thing and making sure everything works together. You don't want to rock the boat too much. Maybe you know, maybe that's where that factors into it a bit. But I think, yeah, there's going to be a situation and somehow it gets rectified if Castro is the guy to be traded, which is a possibility too, but that's not ruled out as much as people think. You know, that's the one established guys of all these shortstops that they have in the system. You don't move the one guy that we know is good. Maybe that's what makes the most sense, because you have to trust this front office as far as evaluating the talent that they have, that they see so much more often than anybody. They should, their number one job, they have so many jobs, but one of the most important and toughest job is being unbiased and very, very thorough of your evaluation of your own team and prospects and system in general, and deciding who we keep, who we move. It's got to be so hard and really difficult to set aside personal feelings, you know, of all these guys.
Right. So kind of to go along with that, you know, Addison Russell and when he might get called up, you know, we've heard this front office talk quite a bit about their desire for players to get a full season in at AAA. And that was understandable when those individual players weren't going to make a difference between making the playoffs or not, the team making the playoffs. This is kind of the first season, the first year in a number of seasons that the Cubs could be contenders. Do you think that the front office will have that same strategy of leaving players in the minors to fully develop if those players could have a large enough impact on the team to put them over the top?
You know, I think they've been really careful with how they've phrased that. And it's basically, ideally, we want a full season at, you know, each level, especially, you know, double A and triple A. But, and they've always talked about how there are exceptions, especially for the superstars. If a guy's ready, he's ready. If he's ready for a promotion, whether it's from, you know, low A to high A, whatever it is, if a guy's ready, if their development plan needs to be changed, then they've shown that they won't, you know, hesitate to change that development plan. I mean, look at how fast Soler shot up. Part of that was, he needed the at bats, right? You know, right. he was always unhealthy. He needed the bats, but he'd shown that he could handle any type of minor league pitching, so he was ready for the big leagues. So they're willing to skew from that thought process if it makes sense. Their development plans are malleable because they have to be. These, you know, things change. You know, if you want a guy to move up a level every year, sometimes you just have to go with what the player dictates, and they've said that all along. I think a lot of that stems from they have to say certain things because they can't say, well, it's because we want to gain an extra year of control, right, or we want to avoid arbitration, you know, making him a super two. And I think that was the case with Rizzo. There was no point in bringing up Rizzo any earlier for his development. It was all about they had LeHaire playing well, so they had a nice little built-in excuse. And then it became, well, this guy's just killing Triple A. This is getting silly, and it just came to the point where it's like, okay, well, you know, we're not competing this year. Let's push it. Let's get that super two out of the way. And it all ended up being moot because he signed an extension. But still, these things have to be considered, because that's as much as there's, you know, baseball trumps it all. Like, baseball decisions are number one. How a guy plays, that's number one, but you have to take the business side into that, has to factor in. If it's 3 weeks like it's going to be for Bryant, yeah, I'll accept that. But sometimes these things have to trump, baseball decisions have to trump the monetary things. And I think we'll see that play out more often than not now, as you pointed out, because they're competing, they hope to compete, you know, right away. So I think we'll see guys on a little faster timetable if it's justified.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the addition of Madden to this club. I think, you know, obviously if you've heard Madden talk at all so far, you have to be really excited about seeing his philosophies put into practice. And if at least excited to about his post-game press conferences, that's probably what I'm looking forward to quite a bit. Admittedly, I haven't watched many of the games that he's managed. I don't have access to Rays games. Of course, I've read about him and his strategies. But what do you think about his management style? And what do you think is going to be most shocking to the average Cubs fans? And, you know, most different compared to previous managers?
Well, to the average fan, let's put it this way. Let's say the average you know, sabermetric fan. Let's look at those people. We know what they're looking for: unique bullpen management, strong lineup structure, and those two. I think he'll hit right on the head. He's going to nail those things and do it in a very analytic, forward thinking manner. He's always going to do that. He's always done that, and he will continue to. I think the one thing that'll surprise people is how much he bunts. He's old school with that. He'll bunt in some weird situations that don't really call for it, but it's not old school to the point where if there's a man on second and there's no outs in the first inning, and Castro's up, he's not going to bunt with Castro,
right,
or Rizzo or Bryant or something like that in the first inning. But he'll do some bunts. He'll do some bunting when it may not, when the Tom Tango run outs bases, that chart that we're, sure, that we all know, says that it's the wrong move. He'll do that. And, I think, there's some, you need to have some flexibility in that thought process of bunts, as far as Madden goes. But everything else, I think he's very forward thinking and I think there may be times where we see him put an odd person at the top of the lineup that just doesn't seem to make traditional sense, but he does it to kind of jolt them. If I remember a few times he did that in Tampa Bay where one of his better players wasn't playing so well, so he put him at the top to kind of get him extra at bats and kind of give him a jolt and give him more time to kind of work out of his issues. He does see that mental side of things that sometimes some of us tend to overlook, and he appreciates that, and he realized that it's not always numbers, that there are things going on that need to be massaged, so to say, and he'll work with that, and if it's adjusting a lineup or giving guys days off or whatever it is, he'll do some funky things, but he'll also do some traditional things. And like you said, I'm looking forward to the post game. I'm looking forward to the pregame too, because as a writer, my role's kind of changed working with Baseball Prospectus, so I won't be writing these, daily gamers and whatnot. But still, it's the last few years, pregame has gotten to the point where it just seemed like it was the same old thing by the time it came to July. No, nothing against Dale Swaim or Ricky Renteria. They're good guys, and I think they're good baseball people. And I believe that Renteria especially has a chance to be a good manager someday. But Madden is a personality. He's a rare personality, and I even wrote that the city has been lacking that for a while as far as baseball goes, and maybe just in general. We've had some great ones. We've had Ditka, we've had Phil Jackson, we've had Lou Piniella, we've had Ozzie Guillen, who, I kicked my career off going to pre- and post games with Ozzie Guillen, and that was some of the most fun I've had covering baseball. So I think Madden is going to top that in the sense that I think he's going to teach me. Ozzie taught me a lot, but I think Madden is going to, he's going to break down the game and he's going to be willing to talk to me about some things that I think some other managers may have felt wasn't really worth their time, I think. So if you've noticed in the press conferences that he's had or the interviews that you've seen, he answers any question, good or bad, one sentence, two paragraphs, whatever it is, he gives a great answer. He, no matter how good or bad the question is, he can give you a good answer. He's great with a microphone in front of his face, and it's just going to be fun to watch that aspect. And I think, like you said, what happens in the games will be fun as well.
Yeah, I mean, even in his introductory press conference, I kind of went into it expecting the cliche answers and everything like that, and I was sitting there just stunned listening to him. I couldn't believe how much, how deep he was going into things, and just the answers were, I don't know, they seemed to catch every one of them, caught me off guard, I guess.
Yeah, I'd done some research beforehand, so he's created his own cliches. Some of those things are his own sayings. And I talked to a couple people that I know that kind of covered him, worked, wrote a lot about him in Tampa Bay, and they gave me some angles to work and some things to look out for. And there were some lines that they mentioned, and he had them. He's had them in the he has his go-to lines, but he's created his own. He was, I mean, I'm not sure if you, I think you said you were at Cubs convention. The panel that he was in charge of, that he was on, I was blown away because, you know, he brought some of those one-liners again, those tried and true, his own one-liners. But then he had some, you know, out of nowhere, just witty remarks that blew me away. I think one of them was the guy running the panel said, you know, most managers leave this town, most Cubs managers leave this town in a straitjacket. And immediately he said 43 regular, you know, he didn't skip a beat. It was, he just has an answer for everything. He's not, you know, Pinella and Baker both said they're not going to be shaken by this job. And eventually they admitted that, yeah, you don't know what you're getting into. And it's a little more, more than you expect. Madden says he can handle it. I don't know if he really knows what he's getting into, but I also think that he can handle it. I really believe that. I think he'll take it really well. There's going to be a time where it gets rough. You would think it has to, right?
Right, I mean, sure, yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's the Cubs. It's just, it's baseball. Every team goes through rough patches. The Yankees, the Red Sox, all of them. Every team does. And just because it's the Cubs, there's going to be extra pressure on him and the team. And when things get really bad, people are going to pounce. The fans, the media, everyone will pounce. And it's going to be interesting to see how he handles it. But I think he'll do well. I think he can do it right. It broke some great managers. And I think he can be the one to kind of push past it. And of course, it all. The bottom line is winning.
Sure,
it's really hard to get that final victory, that final World Series victory. But if they can get in the playoffs consistently, and you know, come through on that promise that Epstein made that first day he was introduced, whatever it was, 3+ years ago, then you know, if they're getting there consistently, I think we should all be happy with that. And then whatever happens in the playoffs happens. But you'd like to see, obviously, to get the big one done.
Right. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here. When you were podcasting with Brett on Bleacher Nation, I remember you being, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember you being fairly certain that Edwin Jackson would have better results after that first less than stellar season with the Cubs. What happened with Edwin? And do you think, I mean, does he have a shot at a starting spot this year, or is he just destined for the bullpen and we'll see what happens?
Yeah, he's kind of gotten overlooked this offseason, right? Well, I mean, what do they do with him? You can't give him a spot, can you? Because let's think about this. We have three for sure's in there with Lester, Arrieta, and Hendricks, or Hamill, sorry. And then you want to give Hendricks as much of a chance as possible. You want to give Jacob Turner as much of a chance as possible. Travis Wood is still there. I guess there's a possibility that he could be traded. There's guys like DuBrant, guys like Dallas Buehler. You know, Jokic can that they like him in both roles as a starter or a reliever. There's probably one or two other starter names that I'm blanking on because they have quality depth as far as, you know, that fourth, fifth spot goes. Do you give Jackson a spot? Like, can you justify it just based on if he has a good spring? It's not like he's never had a good stretch before. But he was really, really bad last year. I mean, and yeah, I was, you know, the peripherals after his first year suggested that he wasn't as bad as that first year. And it didn't work out for him. I mean, he got worse and the peripherals didn't even line up. This was his second year with the team, or was this his third year that just wrapped up?
This was his second, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It feels so long.
I know.
he's, you know, I got to give him credit. I've said this before. He's amazing as far as we ask him the same questions over and over again, because he's pretty much always been struggling. You know, he's rarely had good stretches since he's been with the Cubs. So we're asking the same things, very similar things, maybe just asked in a different way. Never once has he seemed like annoyed with us or even wanted to like brush off a question. Like it's amazing how he's kept that, you know, smile on his face. And even if he wasn't have a smile on his face, he's willing to answer. He's willing to talk. He's willing to try and explain what's going on. He's never made an excuse and said, well, this, that, you know, oh, I wasn't, you know, the defense didn't do their job, or, oh, I just missed on one or two pitches. Oh, you know, I've been playing through an injury. None of that. He's owned up to, you know, I'm not living up to what my expectations are. And he'll tell you, you know, there was kind of an uproar when Theo made that comment at one of the season ticket holder gatherings. He said something basically admitting that, you know, signing Edwin Jackson was a mistake. I think, you know, some people are like, how could you say that? You know, Edwin Jackson must feel so horrible that he said that. I'm pretty sure if you ask Edwin Jackson that, he'll say, yeah, he's right.
Right.
I mean, look at the numbers. You can't, other than, like, all you can go off is our results, and he has not given results. I've been, you know, I think there's a few theories that I have. You know, obviously the command of the fastball is the key. I mean, every manager that everybody's talked about that, both Swaim and Renteria, have always talked about his fastball command, and I think everything goes off that. And I think he's just, you know, he can throw for strikes, but he doesn't hit his spots. I think oftentimes the secondary, he's abandoned certain secondaries. His mechanics come and go. I think that's the biggest thing. I think he's that guy that has potential to be a top of the rotation guy. He had it at least at one point. And every pitching coach that he's had has tried to get that out of him. I'm sure of it. He's even talked about it. He's talked about how he's had so many people telling him what to do and what to tweak. And I think maybe all those little tweaks have just added up to now he doesn't have any consistency.
Right.
He's lost that consistency as far as minute things that only, you know, really good scouts and coaches can notice. And it's hard to repeat that delivery. It's the thing that makes Arrieta great now. He finally found some consistency. He repeats his delivery, and it's a good delivery. And he finally found the balance and momentum and everything. He got it right. And he repeats it. I think there's something going on with Jack Edwin where he just can't repeat things, release point, whatever it is, balance, whatever it is, something is off. And I'm not even sure if he could tell you what it is, but there's something going on there. And or maybe, I mean, I guess maybe he's just not that very good anymore either. You know, that's a possibility. I still see like flashes of, well, he's got decent stuff. I just don't know what's going on anymore. But I have to, last year, at the end of last season, when he made the last start sometime in September, right? And it was just brutal. I want to say it was an inning or maybe less than an inning.
Yeah.
He just got lit up. And I was sure that was the end of his Cubs career. I think he made a relief appearance after that, maybe. But yeah, I don't know what they do with him.
Is there any chance that if he does perform well in spring training, you give him a few starts in April and kind of hope that he puts a few good starts together, and you can just, I mean, they're obviously going to take a hit on him if they can find somebody to take him, but
you know,
is that better than it, letting him take a, you know, just sit in the bullpen? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if you believe that, if it's more than just results, it can't just be results in spring training, right? You have to see something more than results. Like, okay, there's some consistency with the mechanics. There's the stuff is there, you know, whatever it is. If you're seeing that, then I can accept putting him in the fourth or fifth spot. But they have to have a quick trigger with him, you know, quick hook with him. If he doesn't perform in three or four starts, if it's bad, then you can't give him much more than that. You know, it has to be a quick hook, because this we've seen bad starts from this team every year for the past 3-4 years, and they can't recover from bad starts very often. And you know, you just don't want to get that bad taste in their mouths again of, oh, here we go again. You know. There's too much optimism with this team. You'd like at worst a nice, you know, 500 start through 20 games or something like that. You want to see them build confidence. It's going to be a young team with, you know, there's some veterans there obviously that they've added, but you want to build that confidence right off the bat, and getting and having a guy that has been kind of the biggest you know, failure. I hate using that word because I feel bad to say that he's a failure, but you know, it has been, it's been a pretty big disaster, to have that guy, if he struggles for the first month of the season and the team is struggling overall, that's going to leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Right. Yeah. And especially you talk about kind of giving up games in April. I mean, that's such a, they play so many NL Central games that month too, you know, it would not be good. I would assume for the morale of everybody to kind of, you know, just start handing away those games.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, yeah, you're right. It's you just can't get off to there's, I mean, they can get off to a rough start, but I think who is leading that charge, says a lot too. Like I said, having Edwin Jackson be the face of that bad start, if he's really struggling, if he puts up a 7 ERA or something in his first four starts and they, you know, and they're 8-14, it's going to, people are going to freak out. And as much as what the fan reaction, media reaction doesn't matter, you just don't want that bad, you know, mojo around sure. this club to start things off.
Yeah. Well, speaking of bad mojo, last year after being called up, Javier Baez, you know, he didn't perform as well as we hoped, but I think he did perform as pretty much how we expected, I guess. Uh-huh. You know, exciting power with a healthy amount of strikeouts. His performance in winter ball didn't indicate the strikeout rate is going down right away. Is this a matter of, is it pitch recognition? Is it control of the strike zone? Is it a lack of patience? Is it all of the above? And if these strikeouts continue at this rate, does he start in Iowa and just stay there until it gets fixed?
You know, I think there's definitely a solid chance that he starts in Iowa. As far as what the issues are, I think it's kind of a combination of everything, but I think there is, it's not, the pitch recognition aspect isn't hopeless. I think he's, there's a couple things going on here as far as that whatever 2 months that we saw in the majors was, you know, there's people that didn't really know anything about Baez and just heard the hype, and then they see that and they're like, what did we just watch? You know, that what why was there any hype? And they you know, but those people haven't been following him. So, okay, that's fine. That's acceptable. But a lot of us have been following him for a while. And I think everyone is kind of – I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people are forgetting that this is what he's done at every level. He strikes out a ton right away. It's like right. I don't know if he's got some sort of reset button at every single at every single promotion, but it's like he completely forgets everything that he learned. And then he just has to calm down. And then if you look at – if you break it down by month at every level – the strikeouts drop all the time. The strikeout percentage will go from 40% the first month to about 25% his last month before he, you know, gets promoted, because he, you know, Javier Baez at a 25% strikeout rate is terrifying. That's know, that's above league average, but we're in an era that league average is almost 21%. So 25% for a guy like Baez would be a dream come true. I'm not sure if he'll ever get to that level, but even 30% for Baez at the major league level would be acceptable if he's, you know, if he's hitting for power, which obviously Baez would if he's making at least semi-decent contact. Right. So what, you know, I talked to John Maley about this briefly. Unfortunately, it was in, I haven't gone back and listened to it because I told him, I was like, get as detailed as possible and just talk, and I will listen to it back and try and make sense of it then, because sometimes it's one of those things where you just put a mic in front of a guy and just talk and tell me what's going on and what you worked on specifics, and when listening to it again, I'll break it down myself. I need to go back and listen to that, because I think there's some good stuff there as far as what he's working on. But I know there's some mechanical tweaks that he worked on. And one of the interesting things that he told me, and this is possibly why he had so many strikeouts in the Puerto Puerto Rican League, right?
Right, yeah.
They started focusing on zones. And they said anything that isn't on this part of the plate at this level, we're just taking. We're not swinging at anything that isn't right here. Mm-hmm. And even cutting it, and it wouldn't, he's like, it doesn't matter if it's a strike. It doesn't matter if you can hit it. We're only focusing today. We're focusing on these pitches, or this series, we're focusing on these pitches, and this is what we're swinging at. So he kind of had that type of game plan where he's looking for a specific pitch in a specific zone. And I'm sure that led to a lot of two strike counts. And he said, and John told me that, once he gets two strikes, it's like, okay, now you're back to your, you know, you have to swing at any strike. So I'm sure that led to a lot of strikeouts. At least I would assume that leads to a lot of strikeouts for anybody. Sure, yeah. You get two strikes on someone, you're taking pitches you can hit, you're going to strike out a lot. So I wonder, I'd caution against getting freaked out about those numbers. It perfectly acceptable to be freaked out after what we saw in the majors last year, because at times it was rough. It looked like he didn't know what he was doing up there. But like I said, I'm willing to give him a chance and see what he does month by month, and see if he's learning anything. And even if it doesn't look great by the end of this year, I think it may be a process with him. It's the major leagues. This isn't AA, AAA anymore. You know, it's the major leagues, and it may take a while. I wouldn't give up on him even if he hits 200 this year, you know, and strikes out, 200 times, if he even gets enough at bats to get to that level. But I think it may be a process with him. I don't think he's a Chris Bryant type who comes up and is productive from the get go. So this may be a rough year for Javier Baez. But I'd like to see, I think it may be just baby steps with him. If we see minor improvements on different things, then it could be a big positive sign.
Right. This is kind of a silly thing to do in February, but looking ahead to the trade deadline, let's say that the Cubs are in the thick of things. And I mean, I guess really at that point, there are a lot of teams that are still technically in it. If that's the situation, will we see the Cubs look at trading off an asset, a prospect to compete this year?
Yeah, you know, I would guess they're not going to go after, say the Tigers are out of it, right? My guess is that they won't pay, at least they won't pay a big prospect price to get a guy like Price, you know? But if there's somehow a guy that's available that has a year and a half or 2.5 years left on his deal that makes sense, then I could see a deal. But, you know, those guys, I can't even throw out a guess about who that guy may be, you know?
Right.
But I wouldn't see them go after a half-year rental and pay the type of price that, you know, gives up a name that we've heard of, at least, or that we wouldn't, that anybody that follows the Cubs or is a fan of the Cubs would feel uncomfortable giving up. I don't think they're going to do that.
They're not going to do what the A's did.
No, because, you know, I think what Billy Beane did made sense at the time, but I also don't think it's not what the Cubs need to do right now. I think there's a time and a place to go be bold and kind of push your chips all in. I don't think 2015 is that time for the Cubs. If they're on pace to be first place, then you take that. You're happy with it. If there's a little tweaks here and there that you can make, sure. And if there's a big deal to be had that, like I said, that has a guy that where you can acquire a guy that has a year or two left on his contract, then yeah, you think hard about that. But don't go after Jordan Zimmermann if somehow he's available, or David Price, or there's the list is so huge. Johnny Cueto. I mean.
Right.
Man, you just hope that, four of these guys are available come next November. And I'm pretty confident that the Cubs are going to get a second arm to team up. And maybe the ideal situation is they trade for Hamels and then buy one of those big bats that's going to be available, because there's a couple that should be available come November as well. Jason Hayward off the top of my head, but I think there's about two or three other really nice bats that are going to be hitting free agency come November. So they have some options, and I think the biggest thing is I'm pretty sure they're not going to go, you know, hog wild come July.
Right. All right. Well, I just have one more question for you. From following you on Twitter, it's clear that you're a beer guy. Mm-hmm. What's your go-to right now, and have you found anything recently that kind of tripped your trigger?
Oh, my go-to right now. Oh man, see, that's so hard because I really switch it up a lot. But so right now, there's a few things that just came out that I'm a big fan of. Central Waters does a bourbon barrel aged stout that just came out, and my wife and I are big fans of that. So definitely picked up a couple 4-packs of that. Hop Slam just came out, and I just bought a 6-pack of that, and I'm actually enjoying one right now. And I recently discovered, or rediscovered, I guess, because I have had it, but it was before I really liked darker beers. Ballast Point makes a porter, a vanilla coffee porter called Victory at Sea, and I just discovered that. I want to say I drank it the night of the Super Bowl, and it is delicious, and I picked up a 6-pack of that as well today. So I mean, as far as go-tos, you know, there's some great IPAs or stouts that are always around that year-round that I'd recommend, like Anti-Heroes, one of my favorite IPAs, and that's probably my go-to. There's a brewery in Evanston called Temperance, and they make an IPA that's amazing called Gate Crasher. And if you can ever, if you know, that's pretty available, like even at like Walgreens and stuff like that. So if people are listening and they're in the Chicago area, you should pick up one of those two IPAs because they're easy to find. And anybody that likes a nice hoppy beer will love those beers. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm drinking right now. And I'm kind of on this bourbon barrel aged stout kick. And,
yeah, that sounds really good. I don't think I've had that before.
Yeah, anything bourbon barrel aged stouts are amazing, and I have like I probably have about 20 stored up right now in my closet that I'm saving for special occasions.
You're ready for the next snowstorm?
Yeah, exactly. It seems like it's perpetually snowing. So.
Right. All right. Well, Sahadev, before you go, for if those listening aren't already following you on Twitter, where can they find you?
You can find me at Sahadev Sharma. So that's SahadevSharma. You can find my work at Baseball Prospectus. I'm writing pretty regularly, and I write about everything Cubs and the rest of the big leagues. So hopefully you'll enjoy all of that, and we have plenty other great writers to offer you as well. So. Please do come to Baseball Prospectus and enjoy our wonderful work.
All right, Sahadev. Well, thanks for your time, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.